this Thursday.
Well, I wasn't able to wash. I washed you what I could.
Yeah.
But I just wasn't able to wash. Yesterday I got that oil heater because I wasn't able to get no wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, I ain't able to get
and
no
you,
wood.
And it helped because you don't have to bring that wood in.
No, and I had to go out there and feel bad or good. I had to go out and get wood and bring it in and make fire to keep the
you know, she said there's, you know, Dorsey Townsend and Snow Slater. They send their kids to school and she's got to pay to send them. And they don't pay a cent a tax. And I said, well, how come? Mrs. Hawkins is over there and she this is what she was, oh, she was indignant too. You know, they're going to make the city limits out here and change Cross Creek around and have to pay utilities taxes. And of course, you know, I kept saying, well, they can't do that, can they? She says, yes, they're going to do it. She said, so I asked her how come they didn't have to pay taxes. She said, because they're not assessed over $5,000. And I can't even sell a couple of acres of my land. Yeah, she just, she's got to sell 5 acres, at least. They won't let her sell 1 or 2 acres anymore. She's got to sell 5 acres. Well, that brought her up to the land that she was trying to sell. The man wants to buy all those acres over there. And she's upset about that because the government gets 29% of it or whatever she sells it for. And if she makes him pay a little now and some each month for a couple of years, she said, do you know as long as he pays the interest, he doesn't have to pay me a cent? He said, I can die and he still won't have paid it. Because all he's got to do is keep the interest up on it. And Ms. Hawkins says, well, you can't win. The government's got to get their share. But she didn't go on too long about it. But she had money on her mind, I think.
And sapsuckers.
Yeah, and sapsuckers. Mr. Crutchfield was the one that tickled me. This is after lunch, and we went back in there and sat down. I stayed a long time because I felt kind of bad about never being out there. So she sat down in the chair, and she said she'd try to get people to do it for her, you know, come out and look without having to go to Sears or someplace like that. So she looked up this fellow's name in the phone book, Mr. Crutchfield. She said, he came out of there and he was so old he could hardly walk. And he looked it over and told her he'd charge her $2,000 for it to do the job. And she said, and then he told me I'd have to feed him and sleep him out here. And then I'd have to pay him $1,000 ahead of time. He said, that sapsucker. I told him, I said, you could take my $1,000 and go off down the road. Or you might die before you finish because you're so old. Couldn't hardly walk. He said, well, I might get the job done. You might not pay me my money. She said, yep, but if I die, there's somebody left to pay it to you. Then she said, after that, she got another fellow come out from Hawthorne, and he looked at it, and he told her, he says, you might just as well tear this house down and get a trailer. She didn't even call him a sapsucker. Just sent him back. And got on to Mr. Weaver. She's mad at him because he won't do it. Or he won't help with the job. You know. She said, he came over and Marvin couldn't stay to talk to him because he had to get a haircut. I said, well, I just laughed. I said, yeah, I'll go over and get Mr. Weaver to do it for him. She said, that's some snap sucker. He wouldn't cut anybody's hair. She said, I asked him. I said, she didn't want him to do the roof. She knew he couldn't do that. But there's something she wants done along the side of the house. Marvin can do it. All she wants Mr. Weaver to do is to come out and help with it and take his time and not push himself or anything like that. But he wouldn't do it. And so she wasn't too happy with him. I don't think she wanted Sears or, she wants somebody, just one person to do the job, I think. Mr. Weaver wouldn't do it.
That's too big a job for Mr. Weaver.
And I told her he's been kind of sick lately. Mr. Crutchfield was.
He's been working steady. We see a car in front of the truck stop every time we pass.
Think he has to, because he wasn't there all day Saturday.
Yeah, he's been eating. Working.
Yeah.
And he's tired of cooking.
She's so funny. She switches, she talked about the house mostly, everything she wanted to do. She had another letter for me, guys. After lunch, we've been talking about Sears because they told her she could take 5 years to pay for that job, that long credit card. She said, now you tell me, how can they let me take that long to pay for something? I said, well, it's because they're a big company and they can, they've got the money to let it out that long. She said, I wouldn't do that. She said, what if the payment came due on a day when I couldn't get into town? She said she didn't want that hanging over her head for 5 years. And, she's going to pay cash for it. But as soon as Sears came up, when we got through lunch, that brought up this letter somebody gave to her. I don't know who it was this time, but it's a letter from Possum Gulch to Sears Roebuck. In reply to, a Dunn, they're trying to collect a bill from him. At least this time she didn't make me read it out loud. It was horrible.
Now, what is this? I didn't get in on that.
Well, she'd been talking about Sears, and we just finished lunch, so she said she had a letter she wanted me to see. And she thought she might send it to Sears sometime. And so she hunted in there in her bedroom, and she said she gets these letters and those jokes, and she takes them to the lady who does her hair at the beauty parlor. Every time she comes in, the woman says, well, what do you got for me today? Because she knows what to expect. Well, she got the letter out, and it's supposed to be a reply to a letter from Sears Credit Office saying, why haven't you paid your bill? And back in 1910, I think they started that. So it's supposed to be this farmer saying why he hadn't paid his bill. And each paragraph is he goes, just gets worse and worse. And so she let me, I didn't have to read it out loud this time because there wasn't anybody else there. It's one of those really nasty kind of things. She started laughing while I was reading it. She said, I wish there was some way I could make Mr. Miles read this. And she sat back in the chair, and she just laughed. I said, well, I know how. I said, I'll just leave it on the kitchen table one day. She said, you wouldn't do that. So I told her I would, and she got so tickled. She said, what do you reckon he'd do to us?
Oh, she just loves to be in a conspiracy, doesn't she? What do you do to us?
So I told her, I said, well, the next time you see him, you just ask him. Tell him you've lost a letter you wanted to send to Sears. So now I gotta leave it here so you can say you've seen it. She said, well, what if Mrs. Miles sees it?
She must have a low opinion of
it. Is it all outrageous?
Oh, yeah. Yesterday. Well, except for a little while she's cooking, she, I was going to tell her about a little bit about lunch, but she took John's side. You know, just, I told her John tells Jim all his troubles, and she said, well, that's why she doesn't go anywhere anymore, because when she goes to see somebody, she starts talking about James being killed. And Marvin's sister told her to just shut up one day. She didn't want to hear it anymore. She said that's why she didn't go anywhere. And she said, and she was serious here. I mean, she wouldn't look around. She said that one day she'd been feeling so bad, she'd been thinking about doing something she shouldn't do. And I'm pretty sure she meant suicide. And that's when she brought up that James' wife saying that it was her fault he was dead, because she sits on her money. And if she comes to town and she, Rosie, or meets her, she can just expect to get a beating. Miss Mary says they had $400 a month to live on. But that was the only time she got kind of, you know, down in the dumps. The rest of the time she was.
Well, that's enough to get in the dumps.
Well, she, and then it's real funny. She'll talk about doing the stuff on the house, and but every once in a while it'll slip in. It really does worry her having to decide what to do. And she says she's been beat so many times, and she worries about getting beat at it again.
She will get beat.
Oh yeah. But, you know, and she knows it. It kind of worries her. But,
I went over and talked to Dodd after supper one night. He's a universal genius, you know. He knows everything. He really knows a lot. And he said the way they did, they'd come over there and tell them what all they were going to do. The roof on the house and everything. But they wouldn't ask him about it until it was halfway through the roof and something had gone wrong. And then they'd come over there and ask him, what do you do about it? And by that time, you see, he couldn't do anything.
Right.
And that's what happened when they talked to me. They don't ask me anything. They ask me what my experience with those things is. What Berman said gives to that. What Berman said is that the best roof is a tin roof. It won't burn, and your insurance rate is way down. And those shingles they put on will burn.
Yeah.
Get hot. And he said the plyboard sheeting was about the worst you could get. Wouldn't hold a nail. That's what Cookie said was that first thing. And he had experience with it. He had several cases. A good strong wind will flap them up and just blow them off with the plyboard. I was going to hold the nail. And he said if it was him, he'd just take off a week and save $500. That's how much margin they've got in the Sears would have, or any of these people would have. And they can do it in a couple of days, you know. Seriously, one man couldn't do it. But they're just short of enterprising. they can't stay on it long enough to get it done. They see all this hay equipment they've got, they've actually never used it. They've never had hay to use it on.
Well, I was real surprised when they just had that little plot that they had this summer when they were making. I thought when she talked about making hay, they'd have a big pasture, but it was just little.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, she makes some keys now, does she?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she is. She went through all what they're going to do, or she wants to do to the house.
Oh, did she?
Yeah. Well, I couldn't follow a lot of it because I didn't know what she was talking about. But she said she wanted to paint, you know, that parlor, or the living room, is all panel on the roof. And she doesn't like it. She said the knot holes remind her of wasp nests. She don't like them. She wants to paint it. Well, she'd been over to Aunt Nora's, and Aunt Nora had gotten her ceiling painted with the white paint, and she'd gotten the glossy kind, high gloss. And Miss Mary says, usually, you know, the paint stores tell you use the flat on the inside and the glossy on the outside, but Aunt Nora had used the glossy inside, and it just shone so bright you could see yourself in it. And Miss Mary wanted the roof, wanted the ceiling like that in her bedroom. So she got Curtis to get the paint, the high gloss, and he painted, but it didn't shine like Aunt Nora's. She doesn't know what she wants to paint the ceiling in the living room too. And Curtis and his wife or somebody is going to paint the outside of the house for her, and they want to paint it a barn red. She's not going to have anything to do with that. She don't want her house red. And then let's see, they're going to put awnings up over the doors and windows.
Keep the rain out.
Yeah. But she won't do that till they're finished with the roof. She's going to use the tin from the roof to build a barn. She's planning to. And they're going to do some things. Marvin's going to strip blocks and part of the house. I didn't know what she meant. And redo them.
No.
I didn't know what she meant.
She has a good deal in mind.
She has a lot in mind.
She said once twice she wanted that porch put out there.
Oh yeah, they're going to wall in the porch. I don't know whether they're going to take the windows out, you know, and put the boards in, or I think that's what maybe she wanted Mr. Weaver to do, was to help, you know, board that in.
A porch along the dining room, and close up the kitchen entrance and enter through the dining room, is what she told me.
Well, she didn't say anything about that. She just said she was going to do something out there, but I didn't understand what it was. And then they were going to wall in that front porch. And she wants to get some rugs for the floors. She's got all sorts of plans.
Yeah, they have a little money they got to kind of lose. I don't know who's in favor of that roof, whose idea it is, and maybe both of them, but Marvin is in on it too. And why they, what's wrong with the present roof, I don't know, it leaks, but they can fix it. Well, if they would.
Maybe it's just she doesn't want a tin roof anymore.
It could be. You see, if they're self-conscious about it.
Yeah. She, if she'd been down, she'd talked to Dr. Gimini about it, and he told her, you know, to do it like she wanted it. So I got the impression she just didn't want tin up there anymore.
Well, it
looks
funny. But they could replace the tin, you see, without any sheeting. You'd watch that. If they wanted to replace it.
Well, evidently that's not it, because I'm sure she can. I don't think they want the pin. Or she doesn't.
She didn't say that, but I think that's what it is.
She said the wind caught one of those patch places and made it flap all night, and she was tired of listening to that thing flap all night.
Yeah.
And she didn't know why she had to put up with it.
I like the young flap. That's curious, isn't it? Sure, now, let me tell you, I've been talking to you a little bit about the administrative side. You see, what happens on the writing is that a lot of people want to write, and they take a writing course, and then they never write. The output is extraordinarily small. And what I have worked on is something that will, it's not such a big job as creative writing. Mm. And actually, there's Lady Snapsucker, Woodpecker's Red Belly. But something that they can do. Now, you see, it still has to be mental. And it's almost impossible anywhere to live a mental life. Now, you see, if you were close to Jim's family, you see, it wouldn't be like a holiday anymore, or a weekend, or a place to go and coach.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have a very strong anti-intellectual feeling. Any of the families, your own family. I mean, you just don't have it. There's nowhere to find it. So, I've never had the ear. I've never had the ear of anybody, of the officials over there. And I don't think it works that way anymore. I don't think I could go in there and say, now I caught these buzzards out here, just sewing off, just setting, and not fruitful. You know, like I did the other morning when I jumped on. Then no one wants to hear it. No one wants to do anything about it. Now, in my mailbox, I missed a couple of days, and I got my mail yesterday, and it's awesome. They've got a man up there today, the whole department, or the tenured people in the department, are entertaining him. Everybody's going to see him. Then they'll have a little cocktail party over that. This afternoon, tonight, they will go over Dr. Green. And then there's one thing after another. Just another thing. And just tired to think how much I would say. It goes on. And the lying professorships that I told you about. And you see, I can't go in there and talk to them about that and say, now, I could give them a case, I could make a case out against you. I mean, you know, I'd have to fix it up really, because none of this has to be present. I'd say, now, Ms. Harold has worked with me for a good while, and I press her, and she's tired of me. She wants to get someone that will just let her contemplate. And you see, Kirkpatrick is famous for getting no work out of students. He belongs to Jay Wyatt's generation. It wasn't the thing to do. And you see, I've never been able to talk to her. You see, it's just like me talking to the table. The table talking to me, there's just no common language. See, I put pressure all along the line, and he puts absolutely none. If you get the work done, you have to push him. Well, you see, I couldn't say that. But I could make out the case. I'd say, well, Mrs. Harrell, enough of this. Well, I put pressure on it. So she's going to switch, play one against another. But the whole objective is, she's found out that the rights have to work. You can't sit, let it come to you. She knows that. But you see, it won't do any good. They don't have the time to do anything about it. And they don't do that anymore. And I think what happens is, that works through the professional meeting. I think you'd go to the Creative Writing Club or Association, whatever that is, if there is one, or in some branch of the South Atlantic MLA, SAMLA. And I could present, you see, what I found, and they'd all pick it up, you know, sooner or later, either by listening to me or the word of mouth or something like that. That's a long ways around, and I don't think it worked. I don't think likely any of those people care much about what the students do. I don't think they do. Their concern is with the Southern Literary Quarterly. And in writing, so nobody can understand them. So you see, I'm at odds with the creative writers, and you know the way the academic world is going. But you see, I'm past tilting with them. If I had known 2 years ago what I know now, I would have done it. I'd have done it with great pleasure. But I didn't know it, and I don't have the energy. It's a sort of a young man's game. A young man in this profession, say around 40. See, if some young fella, somebody around 40, who was spunky, had what I have, he could have a good time with it. And that's what it is. And you see, that's the reason but you see, I'm not thinking about people being writers, as you know. I think that ought to be just thrown clear out. No one ever ought to mention it anymore. It's awful. It's almost like saying you're going to be a preacher, and then you're going to be a model in the community. And that sort of model is not worth anything, you see. Mm-hmm. That's professional model. You got to put him out there and let—he's immune. They grant him immunity, you see, when he makes that declaration. It's not worth a hoot. Now, anyone who professes to become a writer actually is practically saying that they'll never do a damn thing. It's just something that they'll carry along in their constitution. And one day they'll get good and drunk and face it, you see, that they haven't done anything. And then maybe they'll quit talking about it. They'll say, I used to think of it. I don't know anything. It's more of a hoop yet. I'm going to be a writer. This, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. All like that. There's so many ways of kidding yourself. So many ways. I've done it. Much so successfully. Most of the time I did it, I just ignorance. Just plain ignorance. And listen to what people told me. You know, wasn't right. And I didn't know then, you see, that position about. I don't believe a damn thing you're saying. The only protection you've got. And then you can look at it. If there's anything in it you can use it. Then throw it away. You know, I've got a rather interesting place that has no influence. But for those little freshmen this time, I got a hold of them the first week. I don't have any pigtails in there, for one thing. No bare feet. That's the extraordinary thing. Last spring, I had one that was all barefooted. Didn't have the pigtails, so they had everything else. Yes. It was a trial just to go in there. But anyhow, I got to that point where I can see them. And that little thing, this vegetation, they talk about that a little bit. And then I can bring up Tilly this night, you see, where he says that Anderson doesn't know what he's talking about. And yet he couldn't say it. That's what he said about Hawthorne, remember? Cargill, Oscar Cargill. That's what he said about Hawthorne. I said, now that fair, that kind of fair. It just, what do you think you put in the end? It just intrigues me. But after I read Trilling, I can see that he hasn't put it in. And I read it to him, and in that light, you know, it is so stupid. People in a small town making such an effort to be amused. Just one little paragraph. So to say, it's not really in it. And I said to him, I used Mr. Weaver on that spot at horses, and they were that young. And I've been saying now, since I talked to Mr. Weaver, I'm a little doubtful about all this writing stuff. It looks to me like I can read this almost. Is this is something that he has done? It's like it's something that happened. And I saw those kind of things. Because George Willard, you see, and I'm about the same age. We both went to him. I see him. And they caught the eye, as you see. It's something I've never seen before. And I said, this old creative stuff, just a little bit of time. But it, I'm used to it enough now. I'm not fighting it. I'm not fighting to learn. I've got a hold of it well enough now that I can, you know, do it with some ease. And it's I've got no chance with them, though, of course. This is the last I'll see of them just this time. They've got somebody to fend for them. And I don't believe the university has faced it. Anyone in any of the writing courses, Mr. Kirkpatrick, any of them, see, he's had some bad nights too. And they've done some good work. Somebody has to fend for them. They've got to have home space somewhere. If the university does it, they just keep getting scholarships. They make scholars of them. They won't be writers anymore. Well, they'll be so scholarly, you see, their writing will be so difficult. If the university does it, The demand for students in those seminars is so great that they'll take a man with one leg any day in a week. They've got their requirements, but they also have the seminar to fill. That little piece in there, that other reader, that one says three. This by the Frenchman, Camus, towards the end. it's so easy. Effortless. And the English is fairly good. The translation is fairly, it's fair English at least. You don't remember that one?
Yeah. The guest.
The guest. Well, you'd say there's no effort. There's not. Almost effortless. And it's not like fiction. There's nothing contrived about it. It's just after another way. Well, it's just like that morning. Miss Daisy was here, and Nick came in. I told you about that another time. With a girl going to the Cape for the holidays or something this weekend. I had that material from one of the Vanderbilt alumni on the, what do you call it? Receiving the men and the dormitories. Girls, dormitory privileges.
Visitation.
Bedroom privilege. That's what he was saying. I never put my mind to it before. But I thought I'd go on with it. And I worked it out. You know how I do on a typewriter. And at the end of the letter, I could see that it was just a part of all this stuff that's obnoxious. Also, the privilege of not going to class. So you could argue those things. You could read up on it. But here Nick came, sat down and talked a while. And that all was right before you. You didn't have to go anywhere. There it was. He was halfway between the campus and the Cape. And all sorts of complications there, you see. He and the girl can eat breakfast together. He don't have to need class. They got no scholarly standards up there. And you can just name whatever you want to. You can see it right there. That little thing. It is very easy. Well, why make it difficult? Need any creative writing on that. You just need, you know, the creative writing helps. You know, a little. With just looking at it, you can read Camus. You don't need to take a course in Camus in order to see that. And read Mr. I'll give you a copy of that. Read Trilling's little article on it. You haven't seen that?
No, I haven't seen that.
Then that little piece of his on Anderson, Weinstein. He read that to see when it came out. It was adolescence, he said. And it's one of the books that you carry with you. You live with it. See, all his life he knew Anderson, and he read them. And he read the other things that Anderson wrote. But he did that as Anderson wrote them. And he did it way back, you see. I mean, he wrote this way back. So you're reading. Increases mine. You see, as I can see him, if he's transparent, I can't see it, but he can help me see it. I won't see it. Now, Miss Betsy, that was a you heard a little of that. That's a view of Mag. You see, that I didn't have. Oh, she had the devil in her. She's dying. She asked Nettie for that stick. You heard that.
Not that part, no. She's dying. No, that was what she didn't hear.
What did she hear?
Not what she did when she was dying. Not what she did when she was dying. Just even when she was dying, she had the devil in her.
Yes, well, that's it. Mm-hmm. And she couldn't lift her head off her pillow. And she asked Nettie, her daughter, to hand her that stick. And that stick still leaning in the corner where she left. That's never moved. She wanted to get Laura, get her off her porch. Oh, she had to go. Now, that's and it wasn't just when she was old, it was all her life she had the devil in her. She went up and now this Bessie told it and said it was in during preaching. This Daisy said it was after the church. She went, the preacher said she said something and she got up and said he's a liar. He's a liar. Mm-hmm. Went up there and knocked the fire out of him twice. She came over here with Miss Carey. Miss Carey over here, Miss Boyle. Miss Carey was the last authentic owner of this place. She had a whole line of them. She and I broke it. But if I hadn't got it, B. Rogers would have got it, and I can't see that that would have helped him. Miss Carey had the nail in her. They're both. get in that truck and go all over the country looking for fun. I'd say they're on the Reedsburg, and I'd say and cuss all over. No, I said cuss. I said and talk all over. All right, I was back up here. She didn't come to see me. Miss Davis said she came to see her. And she said, oh, I do miss my. Right. Now, yes, went to the love feast. Miss Bessie, you heard her talking. On the love feast, she said, if they didn't come out already, she should all know it. And if they didn't bring it out, she said the preacher would bring it out for them. Do you remember that?
Are you right, Lady Mason?
In those days, she said, but now the preacher comes. They go from one generation to another. The days is whole on all those generations is as remarkable as any I've seen. It's remarkable. A whole on it. Now you see, if I was down there, I'd sit on the porch like she was yesterday afternoon when we came back town, almost dark. We stopped for the paper and they said there's Miss Daisy on the porch. And then stopped. When she came back, she said she had she's eating her supper in a bowl. I said, I don't know what that is. She goes, I don't know. Right? I said, maybe it's Perlo. That's what she and Granddaddy were eating one time out of a bowl when I was down there. She said this morning, fruit. She had her supper. All that stuff. I was going to, Ocala. But that's the trouble. That's the trouble. They teach it all, but nobody does it. And it's like the, you gear it up. You say, all right, I'll make a calendar. And somebody's going to be out here, or be out somewhere, you see, at 10, 12, and 4. Education people have done that. You see, every minute of the day for those youngsters is set down. And what that means is, of course, some of it has to be planned, but what that means is that they can't do it themselves. Or won't do it themselves. But they're so regimented now that they can't do anything unless they are regimented. That's the education department does that. So they regiment them. Once you get in public school, that's where you'll work. Everything you do will be regimented, whether you're going to school or teaching school. It's all regimented. Here's the money for it. You don't get much. I feel I don't sleep much over.
Peace.